Thank you, Bill. I am tremendously honored to be back here at the clinic. I think my first clinic was in 1980, and I was at ITC at the time, and I've worked for a number of companies since then. But I've always looked forward to coming back to the clinic. Now, if you, any of you remember ITC, they made cart machines. And if you remember ITC, you might also remember a fellow by the name of Jack Jenkins. Jack Jenkins was the president of ITC when I was hired. And 6 months later, he sold the company to 3M. And he went to the lawyer's office to pick up the check for $4 million and take it to his bank. And on the way from the lawyer's office to the bank, Jack Jenkins had a heart attack. He had a quadruple bypass, and he spent the rest of his life in a wheelchair. And I talked to him later, and he told me that the reason that he had a heart attack is he had no freaking idea what to do with the rest of his life. He had not planned for the next stage in my life. So I'm not here representing a transmitter company or a cart machine company. I'm here asking everybody that looks like me to think about what we're going to do next, to think about what our future looks like and how we're going to get there, how we're going to make the transition to the next step in our lives. This presentation is not about where to invest your retirement income. This presentation is not about which Medicare supplement plan to take. This presentation is trying to understand what it means not to have a job to go to. What it means not to know what your business card is going to say, because we've been defined our entire career by what our business card says. And that's not going to happen anymore. How to avoid the psychological shock, and it's real, it's not imaginary. And learning how to prepare for your new reality. Turns out, and I've done some studying on this because I am now retired, that there are six basic categories of retirees, and I'll go into detail on each one of these, but just to put that up there and let you think about which category you likely fit in. The continuers, many of us are this. What would you might do? Some of us become help out with AV at church, or teach at a community college, or build and operate an LPFM, or become an SBE mentor. Several of us are that. Or get involved with amateur radio. So that's a continuer. Easy gliders. They play golf or poker, babysit grandchildren as needed, be spontaneous, open to last minute opportunities. Having no set schedule, however, can be dangerous because activity is very important in retirement. Retirement is when you stop living at work and start working at living. Adventurers, I have a number of friends who are this. They start a home business. They go back to college. I did that. Go move overseas. Move into an RV, sell the house, and travel constantly. These are adventurers. They're saying, I've only got this many years left. By darn, I'm going to enjoy them. Searchers, what do? They try lots of things. They see what makes them happy. They're always willing to change course. Introspective, trying to get into the inner meaning and in their internal senses of who they are and what they want to do. They see the freedom from a fixed career as the best part of retirement, throwing out the shackles of a 9-to-5. Involves spectators. A number of friends are this, too. They attend SBE meetings even when they're not in the industry. Half of the people, I'm the chapter chairman of Chapter 25 in Indianapolis. Half of my people that attend those meetings are retired, no longer visit stations, but they come to the SBE meetings because this is who they are. They go to trade shows like me here right now, even though they're retired. They assist other engineers on projects because the other engineers have all the pressure. So they have all of the fun and none of the pressure. And they volunteer at local public radio stations, or LPFMs, perhaps on air. Now, this is the dangerous one, the retreaters. They say, I'm just taking a break to relax. I've worked so many years, I'm tired, I just want to relax. But a short break often becomes longer, and a permanent couch potato can shorten your life. Retreaters retreat to the graveyard. Don't be a retreater. This is a warning, folks. All right, this is some typical statistics. I don't know if you can see all of these, but I am going to make the PDF available so that people will be able to download this. This is data from the Labor Department, the U.S. Labor Department, showing how the typical retiree spends their time. It might be interesting, you can't possibly look at it all right now, but it might be interesting to compare what you do with this kind of, this is per 24 hours. Now, they do say on the Labor Department that the data in the chart adds up to more than 24 hours, and that's because some of the things fall in multiple categories. Okay, I don't know if you can read that, but it says, well, after just a week at home, I've come up with a comprehensive list on how to do things around here more efficiently, honey. And she's sitting there with a frying pan. And it says, the real reason many men don't live long after retiring. And it's funny, but it's important to understand that what you're doing in changing your whole life is going to impact everybody else in your life, including your significant other. So it's important to discuss your retirement with everybody else in your household. Everything's going to change. Your relationship with your significant other, your kids, your family, your friends. It's a transition from your old life to your new life. This is a long list that came from U.S. News and World Report of all the possible things you might consider, or a subset of the possible things you might consider doing in your retirement so that you're not a retreater. There's a number of here that I really like. Keep an open mind, live in the moment, find your purpose. We've been controlled for so long in the stations and jobs that we've had that we really never had a chance to be ourselves. This is an opportunity for us to be ourselves, find out who we want to be. Some key things to remember, and this is a very short presentation because we've got a lot of good stuff coming up. Your retirement is as unique as you are. None of this may apply to you, but you are a unique person, and your retirement is as unique as you are. Analyze the things, take a year before you retire, and think about the things that you really enjoy doing and the things that you really don't enjoy doing, and do the ones you enjoy on your time schedule. That's the most succinct advice I can give somebody who's thinking about retiring. It's a gradual transition, not a step function. Retirement is actually a progression, and it evolves over time with your finances, your health, your family, everything else changing. You have to manage your retirement with the resources that you have through that whole process. And lastly, this is a personal thing for me. From time to time, when you face a fork in the road, imagine yourself on your deathbed. You realize you're never going to get up from this bed. And analyze the decision you're making by looking backwards at your life and saying, what things did I do that I wish I hadn't? And what things did I not do that I should have? And then use what you learned there about yourself to make the decision going forward. It's not the end. It's a new beginning. I hope I started you thinking on that process. I was discussing the off-ramp. Now, the rest of the team here is going to discuss the on-ramp, the people that are going to come behind us to replace us in our jobs. Thank you.
I was wondering how we were going to make that transition, and you just did it. Well done. You've done this before. Thank you. It's about your future. There's a lot of people in this room that are retired, present company included, and some that are approaching retirement and have all those decisions to make. So, you know, take what Chuck said to heart, because it can help you build a really good roadmap for your future. As we all try to build a roadmap for the future of this business and of the technical professionals that will follow us, let's hear a little bit from Andrew Kennedy about the value of SBE certification.
Hi, everyone. My name is Andrew Kennedy. Just a little bit of background about myself. CBTE, CBNE. I've been working in broadcasting for about 14 years now. Currently, I am the chief engineer at News Channel 7. We operate the transmitters WSAW in Wausau, WZAW in Wittenberg, WYOW in Eagle River, and the W21DS translator in Saner. So I began working in television as a part-time master control operator in 2009. I had a college degree in networking, so I knew IT, I knew networking. It was ubiquitous then, it's become even more so now, and so there's a lot of relevant stuff that I knew, but I didn't really know very much about RF, I didn't know a whole lot about cameras, broadcast facilities. So as I started working in a TV station, I identified right away that there was a knowledge gap that I had if I wanted to make this into my profession. I also identified that there was a coming need for experienced broadcast engineers. I think it was in 2014, the SBE, the publication, The Signal, their mail newsletter, put out a poll, and it showed that the majority of the employed SBE certified engineers were over 50 years old, and a large portion of that group over 60. So looking at that, I realized there's a void coming up. There's going to be a need to fill it. And so I started to think about how am I going to get myself up to the point where I'll be able to fill one of those spots that are inevitably coming. A huge benefit that I got in that was working directly with experienced engineers. I was very fortunate to work with a number of very skilled, knowledgeable, experienced engineers throughout the early portion of my career. But another important part of filling that knowledge gap for me has been the SBE and SBE educational resources. To any of the younger people in the audience who might not be familiar with what the SBE has to offer, they have online webinars, a lot of them. They've got practice exam software, so as you're starting to think about testing for various SBE certifications, you can take practice tests and it'll kind of show you where you might be lacking, give you a point of reference point for where you need to study more. The SBE Engineering Handbook, which was published, I think, 5-6 years ago, that's a great resource. And yeah, that's all of that stuff together was able to help me prepare to get to the point where I've been able to test and gain the certifications that I've got. Going to your local SBE meetings is also a great resource. You're going to get to interact with a lot of experienced engineers who have a lot that they can teach you. My experience of earning SBE certifications, personally, that's helped give me the confidence as I've progressed through my career to know that I know the things that I need to know in order to be a competent chief engineer and right now to successfully lead my TV station's engineering and operations departments. That's all I got on SBE certification.
So the future is now. Amy Phillips from the Department of Workforce Development is here to give us some additional background on the Youth Apprenticeship Program and some updates on how that's going. So, Amy, it's all yours.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for allowing me to be a part of your clinic. This is very exciting. I think I was here last year. So for those of you that have heard about Youth Apprenticeship, this will be a refresher. For those of you that are not familiar, I hope you're as excited as I am about it. And you're probably saying, well, how are you a part of this panel? One question I want to ask you is, how are you going to leave your mark? How are you going to leave your legacy where you work? And I'm telling you, the Youth Apprenticeship is one possible way for you to do that. That you could have an opportunity to mentor and train. You can groom and teach youth, the next generation, on how to maintain the quality and the standards that you worked all those years in putting in place at your station. So that's what I'm going to talk to you about. So what is, for those of you that may not be familiar, The youth apprenticeship program in Wisconsin was the very first statewide youth apprenticeship program in the nation. So we are leading the way on this. We don't have the 100 years of history that our adult apprenticeship program has, but we're gaining on them. We've got 31 years now. But the youth apprenticeship program is an opportunity for high school juniors and seniors to have some work-based learning experience. And currently we have 13, and I'll talk about it a little bit further, but we have 13 programs and 75 pathways, including, thanks to the WBA and SBA members, we have a pathway in media broadcast technician. And that's, and what we did is we always want to be industry driven, and we asked employers in the industry, some of them were current engineers, some were retired, and they educated us on what they felt youth needed to be mentored and trained on, and that's what we're doing. For every year of participation as a youth apprentice, a student must gain a minimum of 450 hours of on-the-job work experience, in combination with gaining at least one high school credit or three college credits. And there's a variety of ways that related instruction can be provided. It can be provided at the high school, the technical college. In some unique instances, the employer even provides it, and some online. So there's some key elements of the program I want to tell you about and why you should find it interesting. We always try to walk the walk and say the youth apprenticeship program from the very beginning has been industry driven. We at the state, we're not the experts in your industry, in your business. We ask you, the industry employers and industry associations, to help us, guide us, tell us what we need to mentor and train on. Tell us if there's any kind of safety training or certifications that you would like to see the youth earn or gain in order for them to be of value to your business or to your industry. The youth apprenticeship program, like any true apprenticeship program, requires the youth to have a trained mentor. Now, we'll provide the training, and what that usually comes down to is we will train whoever the employer identifies to be the mentor, and typically that's someone who's looking at retirement and they don't want all that knowledge and expertise to walk out the door, but it just depends on who's the best match to mentor. But we will train them, and usually that's about how do you communicate effectively with a youth. You might already have a mentoring program or already been mentoring someone, maybe even unofficially, but you may not be familiar talking to high school kids, and we will work with you on that. And the way we do it, because we know time is money and you guys are incredibly busy, when we do this training for a mentor, we'll come on site, we do it online, whatever best fits your schedule. It can go anywhere from 2 hours to a half a day, whatever you need and want. It can be in little bite-sized pieces. You might say, the mentor wants training and he only has a half hour right now, and maybe you'll do another one later. So it just depends on what the employer and that mentor have time for. We also, as with any real work situation, require that our youth apprentices be evaluated at least 3 times a year. We have them sit down with the mentor and the employer and be evaluated. And anyone that's interested, I can share with you the list of the 16 competencies list that we have the employer and student go through a performance review evaluation on. And it's like a 1 through 3 rating. And a student can receive a 1 on that, but on their very third and final, or some employers like to do them 4 times a year quarterly when they evaluate their other staff, they cannot have any 1s or they will not successfully complete the program, because we want this to be a real-world experience for the student. We have 39 what we call YA regional consortiums around the state, because we want local folks to be available to you that know your region, that know your industry. So there are 39 statewide consortiums, and if you're interested, I can give you the contact information for that particular office. But I want you to know, not only do you have support at the local area, you also have it at the state level, at the regional level, and at your local high school where the student goes. And at the end of the program, if a student successfully gains 450 hours of on-the-job work experience and they've earned 1 high school credit or 3 college credits, then they're awarded what we call, we're government, you can tell when we say it's the Occupational Certificate of Proficiency. The employers call it the YA certificate, of course, right? And we tell the kids that they're sort of an exclusive club. We used to tell them that. Because when we started the Y program 31 years ago, we had one program in and one pathway in printing. We started with 25 kids. Wisconsin right now is projected to have 9,000 youth apprentices statewide, and we have, like I said, 75 pathways, thanks to all of the employers. So what's in it for an employer? Why do they benefit? And this isn't me saying, this is what we have heard from our employers that are currently participating in the program. This gives you access to that pipeline of youth that are eager to learn about your industry and your business. They come to you. They want to learn from you. They get school credit. They get that knowledge and experience. So they know the value and they know the opportunity they're being given. So they're very eager. As I mentioned earlier, those 39 consortiums around the state, they will work with you. They will sit down and talk to an employer. And I don't know what we really should call this. But I always say attributes. They'll talk to you about what are the attributes that you're looking for in your youth apprentice. Do you want a hands-on person? Do you want someone who's technically savvy? Someone who deals with pressure well? Whatever that may be, they will then go back and look at their students and try to make as good a match as they can. They send you candidates to be interviewed that they've pre-screened. And as a part of that, they will help the student develop a resume, do their interview, but more importantly, they will talk to that student very seriously about what this is that they're taking on. This is a professional job, and these are the expectations that that employer will have, and this is a real-world experience, and you're to conduct yourself accordingly. And one of the key things, and you know, given the workforce shortage that we have in the state and in the nation right now, that's, to be honest, that's why most of these employers want to have a youth apprentice. They really want that access. The best marketing tool we have for the youth apprenticeship program is the youth themselves. When they're going down the hallway wearing a t-shirt that says they're a youth apprentice, when they cross their graduation day with cords that says youth apprentice, other kids want to know about it. Where are you going? Where are you learning this? How did you do this? They also talk to their siblings, and that's pipelines to your business, to your station of a future workforce. And then under the Youth Apprenticeship Program, you can start grooming or molding and creating habits within your future workforce because you're having that opportunity to mentor them and to train them. And then they get evaluated on it, and their grades are counting on that. So they are very interested in being successful. I just wanted to show you real quick, and you may not be able to see it, but there are 12 program areas, including the arts, AV, technology, and communications. Now, that's the classification that the U.S. Department of Labor uses for, and that's where we house the media broadcast technician pathway. And you will get a copy of the slides, my understanding. If you, and the media broadcast technician, thanks to the WBA members and the SBE members, we actually identified, or they helped us identify, 16 competencies that they felt youth apprentices could handle. That's, you know, keeping in mind you're talking about high school students, keeping in mind that this is what the business needs and wants. And so that's how we ended up with these 16. In addition to that, they told us whether they wanted it to be a one-year or two-year program. So there are options available there. And again, I know it's kind of hard to see, but I have copies if you need to see what those competencies are. In addition to the occupational competencies, employers told us we want to be able to evaluate the students on their employability or soft skills. So we have 13 soft skills that employers can evaluate their students on and do as they evaluate their competencies. An example of one of them shows initiative and self-direction. And we can give you more. There is what we call an on-the-job learning guide, and that has the competencies in it and the employability skills. But there's also there's examples of what we mean by that. So an employer know, well, what exactly do you mean by that particular competency or employability skill? So we put a QR code in the slide, but the number one question we get from employers is, how can I work with youth? There's a lot of work, tasks, tools that minor youth cannot use. There's two things I want to assure you. We believe in having safety for the employer and the student, because without that, we realize we will not have a youth apprenticeship program. And what do I mean? How do we do that? Well, because we're the state labor department, the Department of Workforce Development, one of our divisions is the Equal Rights Division, and that is the division that administers and interprets Wisconsin's Employment of Minors or Child Labor Law. We work with them very closely. Everything we developed, the OJL guide checklist, those competencies, we ran that by the attorneys in the Equal Rights Division. They vetted it. They looked at it in terms of the Wisconsin Employment of Minor Laws and the National Employment of Minor Laws to make sure it was safe. They also, because they're our colleagues, anytime an employer has a particular question about a particular tool or task, they will address that for you. They will interpret the law for you in terms of what the Employment of Minor Law says. And also, they're a small staff, but if you want them to come out and talk to your management or look at a particular piece of tool or equipment, they will do that if they have the time, or they will have a conference call or webinar with you on that. The other piece is not only do they look at the law, but they also help us identify if there are particular kind of the trending in it, if there's issues coming up. So we work together very collaboratively in making sure we keep everyone safe. The one thing I wanted to tell you, if you have a student that is enrolled in the youth apprenticeship program, that is considered a bona fide and recognized work-based learning program, which lets you tap into a little thing called the student learner exemption. And what that does is there are certain tasks and jobs that if you're not enrolled in a bona fide work-based learning program, a student cannot do it. But if a student is enrolled in YA, they are allowed to do it on a temporary basis. It's about 5% of their time weekly. But the one exemption to that is if there is some law that says a minor may not do this, such as drive a forklift. For some reason, there's a law out there that anyone under 18, you cannot drive a forklift. I suspect, I don't know of it happening here in the state of Wisconsin, but I believe it might have happened somewhere else where a kid might have gotten hurt. So they put it in there very clearly. And even if you are enrolled in the bona fide work-based learning program of youth apprenticeship, you cannot have the kid drive a forklift until they're 18. But keep in mind, our kids are high school juniors and seniors. Some of them turn 18, and once they turn 18, while they're a youth apprentice, they could use that particular task. There is a website, and I can provide that to anyone that would be interested, that will list all of the particular pieces, tools, and the job tasks that the Equal Rights Division attorneys have looked at. And they have a little a chart in there that breaks out what can a 16-year-old do, what can an 18-year-old do, what can a youth apprentice do as a in the program. And they also have notes in there that kind of tell you why some things are prohibited and some things are allowed for certain youth. So the other thing, as I mentioned earlier, the Equal Rights Division staff, if you have a question for them, they have a web mail address where you can just email them the question. We ask that if you send a question to the Equal Rights Division attorneys to please copy our staff at our mail so that we can be watching that, tracking that. So if we see a trend in certain questions, maybe we can come out with a brochure or some more clear guidance, or maybe we need to go back and talk to the attorneys about what we might be able to do and still be legal under the law. So if you're interested in the youth apprenticeship program, you're probably saying, well, how do I get ready to be a youth apprentice employer? So what I would advise you to do is to look at all, you know, I have a list that I can share with anyone that has all 13 of our programs and all 75 of our pathways. Look them over. Don't just look in your industry. You might need somebody in your business office. We have a finance program, we have accountants in there. We have a business administration, a brand new one we just rolled out this year for a professional assistant. We have one for HR professional. We also have a variety of marketing ones. We have three pathways in IT. So these might be other things that you have a business need for, and we have students that you could be training and mentoring on. And you also might want to be thinking about, okay, if I bring on a youth apprentice, who will be my mentors? And that's where I'm talking to those of you who are like me that are looking at retirement not too long from now, And this is, again, a way for you to give them an opportunity to pass on their legacy, to make their mark, to be able to share. And also, you won't have all that knowledge walking out the door. So that's one thing to think about. And it doesn't necessarily have to just be someone who's retiring. Maybe there's someone who's younger who can really make that communication or connect with them, or somebody who's particularly good in a technical skill that you really want the next generation to know about and to use. So that's one thing you want to do. And the other thing is to start thinking about, okay, I want a youth apprentice. Kind of know who I want to be a mentor. Maybe I don't want just one mentor. We ask that you just appoint one person to be a mentor, but you can have a team. Some of the employers say, you know, we want to make sure we have a backup. So they'll have like a group of other employees who are willing to help train the student once in a while. And mentors, by the way, they don't have to be standing right beside your youth apprentice 24/7 when they're there. You just have to, you know, you have to be at the work site and available for them. And, you know, as the mentor becomes more confident, there might be more time that will allow the student to do some things by themselves and then always be checking in. And then I guess the final thing is, let us know if you're available and interested. You may say, I want more information. I need to know. And then I can connect you with your local YA regional consortium, one of those 36. You don't just have to work with one consortium. You can work with multiple consortiums. You might find that you want a group of different kids from different high schools, and we can make that happen for you. The final thing that I'd like to say is the only thing I don't like about the Youth Apprenticeship Program, it wasn't around in the Stone Ages when I was a kid. I had jobs all the way through high school. I know I would have done this. Kids can gain this knowledge and experience. And, you know, we can't guarantee the kid will stay with you, but a lot of them, they're there because they want to learn from you. They have an interest in your business, in your industry. And this is your way of hooking them, right? And possibly their sibling and their group of friends at the high school. So I hope you'll give it a try. If you're not just thinking about this for your stations, or you got to convince your station manager, just let me know and I'd love to talk with them. But if you are a parent or a grandparent or an uncle or aunt, talk to me about that too. And I would tell you to recommend they look into being a youth apprentice, because we need them in Wisconsin and across the nation. Thanks for your time. Yeah.
Okay, so let me pull these pieces together a little bit. First of all, how many of you have had interns at your stations? Not necessarily in engineering, but in any department. Almost all of you have at one point or another. So there is a difference between interns and apprentices. Chuck, the SBE has had a lot of discussion about this. Do you want to? Can you define that a little bit more for us?
I'm still learning myself, and I think a lot of managers don't necessarily understand the difference between an apprentice and an intern. But as you've said, both positions can be paid, both have different levels of responsibility, and there's a longer commitment to an apprentice.
Yes, absolutely right. Absolutely right. And not only that, but I believe the apprenticeship has to be paid, does it not, Amy?
Yeah, they have to be paid at least minimum wage. Mm-hmm. An apprentice can be a 1 year or 2 years. So you could actually have them for 2 years before they graduated. They can start the summer after their sophomore year of high school and continue past their high school graduation until the end of August, so like a few months later.
Okay, great. So think back in your own past to when you were a high school or college student. You know, how much disposable income did you have? Or was that first internship that perhaps you had unpaid? How was it putting gas in your tank to get to and from work? You know, compensation is important. We have to consider that. There are mentors on your staff. Amy has talked about this, and I'd like to expand on that a little bit, because as I look around the room, I see people who are retired or are approaching retirement that I know would be excellent mentors. I'm trying really hard not to look certain folks right in the face, but you know who you are. You know, being a mentor, it's important to share what you've learned, what you know. But beyond that, it's important to share how you learned it, especially if that story involves a remarkable disaster. You know, all of us are afraid to fail. Lord knows I am, and I struggle with that all the time. And I think that is the single greatest impairment to the success of, well, virtually anyone in this business, but certainly someone who's new to it. You know, what if I do this wrong and the transmitter goes off the air? Well, fix it. Try again. So share those stories of a shower of sparks from your life that let you illustrate a point and help take some of the fear away from them. Because in doing so, you'll provide that reassurance. And this is a really important point to me and has a lot to do with SBE Educator of the Year and a lot to do with why we're doing all of this in Wisconsin. Failure should be celebrated because failure is the basis for learning, and learning is the foundation on which success is built. So don't be afraid to blow it up. Learn from it. Don't make the same mistake twice. That's part of the learn from it.
Keep coming up with new ones.
Come up with new mistakes, Chuck says. Yeah, why not? So as a mentor, you have the opportunity to share that, to take that edge off, and to give that reassurance. The Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and the Society of Broadcast Engineers are dedicated to that education effort. Yes, I have a biased opinion on this, but I think we do an excellent job here in Wisconsin, and I know Michelle is going to nod yes to that. Uh-huh, there it is. How many of you have heard of the Broadcasters Clinic? Oh, come on, you're all here. Have these radio and television technical sessions been incredibly valuable this year? Yeah, a lot of heads are nodding for those of you who are reading along at home. We also have the Duke Wright Media Technology Institute. That's a little different. Some of you have participated in that. This is more of a classroom setting, more of an interactive learning environment where we focus on specific topics in those three general categories, those three general areas. Some of you in the room have been tapped to be teachers for me in the upcoming year, and I thank you. There's more to come on that, but look for it in June in Fond du Lac, beautiful downtown Fond du Lac. So what are we struggling with here in this industry? Where is the next generation of technical professionals going to come from? We've been having this discussion for, 40 years? It's an ongoing question. We keep struggling with that. But think about what you've just heard about the Youth Apprenticeship Program, about what the WBA has to offer, about what the SBE has to offer in certification and training materials. We have an answer for this. And it's an answer that can start right here and have an impact, not just within the borders of Wisconsin, maybe not even at your station, but beyond. So it starts with that youth apprenticeship program. As we reach into the high schools and we find those students that have the interest, the desire to learn, maybe the passion for this industry or this technology, and where can they go from there? We have some distinct pathways now that didn't exist before through youth apprenticeship and through your efforts as employers that can answer these questions, that can make this successful. Yes, they can take this youth apprenticeship program, and they can graduate. They can become employed at your station or somewhere. Do you have the opportunity to create a situation where they make a commitment to your facility? Yes, you do. They may choose to go to a technical college where there are outstanding technical courses available that will strengthen and enhance their knowledge of communication systems, of IT infrastructure. Or now, thanks to the University of Wisconsin Oshkosh's Radio TV Film Program, there is a new opportunity here. Many of us in the room are alumni of UW-Platteville, which for years had an outstanding radio and TV broadcasting curriculum. There are others out there as well. MATC, Milwaukee, very strong. Some components of Madison's program, again, very strong. UW-Oshkosh looked around and realized we already have a successful radio, TV, film program, and gosh, if we look around a little bit, we see electronic communication certificates, electronic certificates, computer science curriculum, and guess what? This is all relevant to the work you do. Can we pull these pieces together and create something for for the industry that could be a leader and provide value? Absolutely. So take a look at some of these courses that they are offering or can offer as part of this program. In electronic communication certificates, the Internet of Things. I found that title fascinating. Who defined it yesterday as there was a different term? The Internet of Things that shouldn't be connected, I think? Yeah. Signals and systems, measures, controls, and data acquisition. Data structures, datacom protocols. How about this? That look familiar to people who have taken courses in the past? That's all relevant. This may come as a shock to some, but Ohm's law still works and is a fundamental piece of knowledge and understanding that we still need today. So as UW Oshkosh looked around and realized that this content existed, and they started talking with department chairs in those areas, they found that even in an age of budget cuts in higher education, they did not have to add anything. They had the component pieces available to build this program. They had the faculty. They had the curriculum, and they are working on that right now. I'm doing this for a reason. I just had an email on Monday from Andrew Smock. He's the chair and associate professor in the Department of Radio, TV, Film at UW Oshkosh. There's been some progress, some movement. He's met with the person in the provost office who is the curriculum guru, and he was very supportive and had good suggestions for how to structure the program. He's collecting syllabi and reviewing the work from various adjacent departments, including information systems. They've had great discussions. We met with them in August on campus. He feels like they're on track to be able to meet the goal of launching this program in the fall of 24. So, yes, it's not a magic overnight solution. You know, wave a magic wand, presto, there's a new group of engineers ready to go to work. This takes work from the university. It takes work from all of you to make this happen. I mentioned music courses here because that's where their recording technology comes into play and their audio for video techniques. It's already part of that curriculum in the music department. I'll leave that up there for a second if you want to read more about that. UW Oshkosh, engineering tech / certificates. You can find the full curriculum outlined there. And if you're taking a picture of the screen, I'll just babble on for another second or two so you can finish that. Check that out, because there's a lot there that can be drawn from to make this successful. All right, so what do you need to do? Well, ask for help. Overcoming objections from your station management or your corporate might be the first obstacle you need to deal with. And the Department of Workforce Development is ready, willing, and able to do that. And then asking for help, I think engaging with the attorneys and the accountants is a good idea. Because if the attorney is throwing the objection, you know, well, we can't do this because of liability. All right. Let's ask a more fundamental question. How do you like your retainer? Do you want us to be on the air generating revenue, or do you want it to go dark? That's a stark contrast, but the future of the industry does quite literally hang in the balance, and it's something that everyone in this room needs to pay attention to and put some effort into this. Be a mentor, embrace failure. I've already covered that, sharing the information and promoting this. It's time for us to stop whining about what we're going to do and wringing our hands, and time to step up and participate in a program like this, because that is the future of where this will come from, and education is the key component to that. Recruit, compensate, hire, train, repeat. Recruit, compensate, hire, train, repeat. A motivated high school student is going to be a sponge in your station. When I graduated from UW-Platteville, I didn't realize how much I did not know. I started at WLUK in 1981, and I thought, hey, I'm here. I know a lot of stuff. This is going to be great. Hey, we want you to do this to the cart machine, to the TCR. What's that? I didn't know what I didn't know. But I was smart enough, thanks to the education I received, to learn, to listen, to follow, and to pick up those skills that were necessary. So all of you have that capability to be the mentor. All of your stations have the ability to move this forward, to sign that youth apprentice. You want to see that pathway to success and where the next engineers are coming from? That was it. We just showed you the whole roadmap. So hop in the car, turn the key, push the button, start down the road. It is literally that important to the future of this industry. And I know you can do it, and we're counting on you to help. This won't succeed without students in the seats. And we can help in that recruiting effort. We can help guide that student on a successful path that is going to take them to higher education, to employment, to gainful employment, and side benefit, we get to keep the stations on the air and we all get paid, which I'm told is a good thing for your creditors. Amy will be available to answer questions. She's going to stick around for a while. You're stuck with me for the next 24 hours. Oh, Andrew, too. Chuck, you'll be here for a while yet?
For a few minutes.
Are there any lingering, nagging questions within the audience now that you would like to address while we're all still gathered right here? I see one.
I wanted to... Mike, there we go. So Chuck and I had a brief conversation just before this, and I'm proud to say that what I do is kind of bringing everything somewhat full circle. In my firm, I have four apprentices that are under 25 that are working with us, that I'm working into. Some of these people are coming from the IT side. Some of them are just, electrical nerds. They have the knack. I think we've all seen the cartoon, right? Okay. So those people coming in there, trying to teach them the technology and the process and all that sort of stuff. But also to what Chuck's presentation was about is I find myself absorbing a lot of people that are on that phasing out of their career where they're retiring. I'm using heavy air quotes here, retiring from their current gigs, maybe with a corporation or something like that, or they want to step back from their consulting, but they still want to kind of dabble in the industry. So they come underneath my umbrella and, now they're still covered by an insurance, liability insurance, and I'll take care of their billing and all that sort of stuff. They keep their clients, and then they just kind of slowly fade away over the couple of years. But what's happening in those couple of years that I have them is I have these, low 20s, people that were not born in the 1900s, as they say, people that are there working with us alongside these people that know exactly what a tube rig is and how to deal with that, and they become the mentors inside of that. And I'm frankly churning people on both ends. Unfortunately, I tend to train people and then they go somewhere else. That's a whole nother story. Nonetheless, that process I think can work, and that's keeping these people in the industry, and it's keeping the mentorship happening inside of everything that's going on there.
So it sounds like it works.
Yeah.
Yay!
In fact, it's a practical application of almost everything we've been talking about here.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Text question.
All right, got a quick text one. Do you have to be a due-paying SBE member to go to meetings?
That's a hard no. We welcome non-members at all of our meetings. We certainly do in Chapter 80, and I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a chapter that did not welcome new members. That's a wonderful way to engage. You may decide to join. You may decide to pursue certification. At the very least, you'll be able to have great conversations with your peers.
All right.
Andrew?
That includes tonight's meeting.
Oh, say that louder.
That includes tonight's meeting. 6 p.m., right? There's an SBE meeting happening right here.
The mic's off.
There's a switch on it?
Whoa.
There we go. Encourage anyone who's not an SBE member, if you have any curiosity at all, attend tonight's meeting.
All right. Yep. And one more thing from me. I was actually pulled onto the committee about, 6 years ago, give or take, because of a roundtable discussion we had about millennials in the workplace and how to cohabitate well. One reason I'm speaking is we learn from each other, whether you're new to the engineering or been there since engineering was invented. If you see anybody with a committee member label, whatever you want to call these, and you have ideas to help promote and grow this for, say, next year's fall clinic so that we can help spread it to everybody else, more than willing to take your suggestions because we can't grow without you, and your input means everything to us. So that's all I got to say.
I just want to say one thing in terms of youth apprentices. If you have kids or grandkids or nieces or nephews and you would like to see them come into the industry, think about that.
Good. Good. Okay. I believe that wraps it up for us. You can see Amy out at the registration table in the back of the room, off to the side. Catch her anywhere here while you can. Thank you.